Today, we'll talk with attorney Philip Jurecki about the problem of activist judges who fill our courts and what can be done about it.
The court has been exercising legislative power. That's a major problem that is being corrected right now, and it's being corrected in many ways through nominations to the court.
Then, Kobe Ferguson of Maoz Israel joins us to share how Messianic Jews are building bridges for the good news of Jesus in the middle of a war.
One of the mayors of a city said, well, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, can you help us build a school? We have so many kids that survive October 7th here in this particular city. And we just said, look, let's step out in faith and do it.
It's the weekend of December 28th and 29th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and today's program is a best-of edition of The Stand Radio. Judges and courts play a crucial role in the direction our nation is heading. In recent history, we've seen a drift in America's courts and judges from what our founding fathers originally intended. So if we're going to be good, faithful stewards of the government that God has given us, then we need to have a clear understanding of what makes up a good judge. Joining me is Philip Jurecki. He's the senior counsel and director of the Center for Judicial Renewal, which is an arm of AFA Action and was created to restore our judiciary to its original role. Mr. Jurecki, welcome to the Stand Radio.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on.
Give us an overview of the kind of drift that we've seen in our courts from what our founders originally had in mind, if you would.
Sure. Well, and constitutionally, we just see what Article 3 of the Constitution says. And Article 3 is the article that creates and defines the role of the judiciary. And what it doesn't say is that they have legislative power. All legislative power under Article 1 is given to Congress, but the court has authority to decide cases. What that means, Jeff, is in any society, you have the lawmakers, the people who are making the rules that we live by. You have a police force, that's the executive, people that execute the law. But then the judiciary has a unique role. They don't enforce the law, they don't make the law, but they decide legal disputes between citizens or businesses based on the law passed by Congress. That is the role of the judiciary. And of course, we've seen in recent decades that the court has been exercising legislative power. That's a major problem that is being corrected right now, and it's being corrected in many ways through nominations to the court.
Yeah. We have a system in place that is supposed to vet judges and candidates for the Supreme Court. What kind of track record have members of Congress had actually when it comes to appointing good Supreme Court and federal judges?
What a great question, Jeff. And it's honestly a little bit tragic. You know, the whole nominating to the Supreme Court process starts with presidents.
Okay.
Democrat presidents have gotten it right from their perspective about 100% of the time. In other words, Democrat presidents have known that they want activists on the court, and they get activists. When they put somebody on the court, they get it right about 100% of the time. Republican presidents, on the other hand, have gotten it right from their perspective about 50% of the time. So 50% of the time, a Republican president puts somebody on the Supreme Court, they remain faithful to the constitutional role. But about the other half of the time, Jeff, we've seen judges go on to the court and we're disappointed because they end up drifting to the left. They end up engaging in judicial activism and taking up duties or roles that the justices don't have constitutional power to execute.
Well, let's get to your organization. What's being done right now at the Center for Judicial Renewal to combat this judicial activism we've seen?
Yeah, so Jeff, we... You know, conservatives, constitutionalists, Christians, we're all three of those, Christians first, but we haven't taken a proactive role in judicial nominations in the past. Now, that's a general statement. I think some people probably have. But as a movement, what we've done is we've waited back. We've waited until there's a vacancy. We've sat back. And then when there's a vacancy, we sort of listen to hear who's being talked about for the court. Maybe eight people are being talked about. Then we'll engage, research them, find those that are concerning, find those that are best. What we've done, Jeff, is changed that and said, you know, if we're not happy about the product, then we need to engage, and we need to engage early. We need to do our own research. We need to come up with our own list prayerfully and through research and not wait for someone else to hand us a list. They should do that. Every other group ought to be able to come up with their own list and their own research. But why weren't we doing that? And I think it's because it was just a habit. It's sort of this habit that we went through. And also, it requires work far in advance, Jeff. You don't engage in that process when a vacancy occurs. If you want to be prepared for it, you have to approach it like AFA has approached it. We started this process 2.5 years ago. It's a lot of work. It's thousands of hours of research to identify the best prospects. So that's what we've been doing.
Let's get into some of the research itself, because this is amazing and this is really fantastic in what you're doing. What kind of standards do you use to vet a potential federal judge?
Sure. Well, we can put it in probably four categories. One is to look and find out what is their judicial philosophy. What do they say about the role of the court? And that's very important. And we can get into the weeds on that, but it's what is their judicial philosophy? The second thing that we do, Jeff, is we look at their worldview. We do want to know, is this a person of faith? Is this person a Christian? Are they not a Christian? Now, anybody can be considered under the Constitution, but there's no reason that as Christians and constitutionalists that we shouldn't prefer people who share our worldview. And we do that because in a vacuum, it really wouldn't matter what a judge thought, because their role is not to make policy, it's to apply the policy of policymakers to cases. But practically, that's not how it's played out. Practically, people's worldviews do matter. We've even seen that recently. So that's part of what we look at. We look at their worldview. We look at what they believe about different issues that have come up before the court. The other thing that we look at their personal background too, where they've worked, where did they go to law school, all of that. But the final thing that we look for is there evidence of courage in their record? Because you can believe all the right things. You can mouth them. You can write a nice law review article that ticks all the boxes, right? But are you going to stand for it when it's difficult, when there's a cost to be paid? That, Jeff, has been one of the most difficult things to identify, courage. But we're getting better at that. And every time we go through this process, we try to learn lessons and improve our process to make sure that we're looking for people that when they get on the court, they're actually going to hold to the positions that we thought they would through our research.
So when you collect all of this data, you have a complete profile of a potential candidate. Who do you give this information to? Who's your target audience?
Well, great question. At the end of the day, the ultimate target our audience is different from who we're targeting now. The ultimate target audience are the two officers or offices within the Constitution that ultimately make the decision on judicial appointments. Number one, that's the president. He nominates someone to the courts, whether it's the Supreme Court or the lower courts, but then that person goes through the U.S. Senate process and they have to be confirmed. So the other people that we're influencing are U.S. senators. But below that, how do we reach them? Well, we can make attempts to reach them directly. But the other thing that we do is we share this information. It's just free. It's almost like white paper. We give it to our allies. There are tons of groups out there that agree with us that are focused on many other things every day because that's their primary mission. But because we're allies and they respect AFA and the work that we do, they want this research. And then they want to be a part of the team and allies in influencing those ultimate decision makers, the president and the Senate.
I would think that there are a lot of senators who would welcome this kind of information because they have their own staffs, they're doing their own research, but especially for believers who are in the Senate,
Sure.
am I right? Do they welcome?
Absolutely. They do. I mean, if they disagree with us, they're probably not going to welcome it. But we have a lot of senators that love our work and love our research, and they're very thankful that we're doing this. And I do want to mention this too, Jeff, because it's not just other organizations also. It's the listeners at AFA, because they're part of the grassroots team that's influencing their senators and people in the public. And I want to take this chance too to thank them, because we've been doing this work for 2.5 years, and a lot of it is under the surface, but we couldn't do it without the funding and the sacrificial gifts of AFA's listeners and their supporters. So thank you guys that are listening.
Great point. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yep.
You have three categories in the Center for Judicial Renewal website: prospective, pending, and confirmed justices. What qualifies someone to be a prospective judge? Where do you go to get these candidates?
Sure. Well, there's not like a, some website out there that lists them. We go out and we'll look at Sitting circuit court judges, for example, is a great place to look. People who already are on the federal bench at the level just below the Supreme Court. So we look at those folks. And then we also have tried to, because the Constitution doesn't say in order to be a Supreme Court justice, you have to have served as a circuit court judge.
Okay.
So we go beyond just circuit court judges. We might look at someone who was a state Supreme Court chief justice or someone who has been an attorney. And what we don't want to do is limit who we look for and then say, well, we can't find anybody that we think is great. If somebody else is out there and it's somewhat non-traditional, but we think they would be a great Supreme Court justice, then we're researching them as well, Jeff.
Well, let's look at where we are now in 2024. There are a lot of things in motion right now.
Yep.
Are you overall optimistic about the future when it comes to appointing judges who understand what their constitutional role is?
I am. I'm more optimistic than I've ever been. And I would describe it this way, Jeff. I used to be a bit angry about the court, and somewhat for good reason. I mean, the things that they had done over the last 5 decades is horrible. Roe v. Wade
Yeah.
alone resulted in genocide of about 60 million babies. That's a big deal. But God did give me a different perspective on the court, and now I do view them according to the parable of the prodigal son. You remember the son? He was a son in his father's house. He had pretty bad attitude, went to a far country. But at one point, he came to his senses and he said, I'll go back to my father's house. And I picture the Supreme Court as that prodigal son who's on his way home. He's not there yet, but he's on his way home. And so I see so much at the court, Jeff, that encourages me that we're heading in the right direction. Now, are we there yet? No. And your listeners could probably right now cite one or two or three things that have disappointed them in the last 3 months, 6 months about the Supreme Court. And we would probably agree with them. The court's not there yet. But to answer your question, Jeff, yes, I believe they're heading in the right direction and we need to keep working and keep praying. And I think we're going to see the court continue to improve.
Great word there. Philip Geragy is our guest today. You can find out more about the Center for Judicial Renewal at afaaction.net. We encourage you to check that out. And also, our guest has hosted a video on everything that we've talked about today. It's called Principles of a Constitutional Judge, and it's available on our streaming platform, stream.afa.net. Philip Geragy, thank you for joining us today on the Stand Radio and for your encouragement.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.
And be sure to check out the article Restoring Justice in the August edition of The Stand magazine. Well, the Word of God says that we are to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and I know that many of you constantly pray for the people of Israel, for the work of the gospel that's going on in that land, and especially in light of the crisis that's happening in the land of Israel. We have a guest with us today that's very well connected with what's going on there. He's a resident of Israel and head of the ministry Maoz Israel. His name is Kobe Ferguson, and he's with us here this morning on the Stand Radio. Good morning, Kobe.
Hey, shalom, shalom. Welcome to be here.
Good to have you with us. Tell us why you are in the States. There was a rally here locally. Tell us what was happening.
Yeah, we've been traveling, myself and others on our team to speak about what's happening in Israel, what happened on October 7th, let people know really kind of the depth of the atrocities and the difficulties we've been going through, but also to give a little bit of hope to Christians who love Israel and been supporting Israel, let them know that the Lord is not asleep. He was not caught off guard, even though we're going through really the darkest season we have in our modern history, but the Lord is doing great things, and he's using Christians and using his body in Israel to actually impact the land during this hard, difficult time.
Yep. Maoz Israel, that's not a word that we would use a lot. Maoz, it's a Hebrew word, and what does that mean?
So Maoz is a Hebrew word which means strength, also means fortress. Israelis would recognize it as a very common word, especially in some songs and literature and the Jewish culture, comes from the scripture that means the Lord is my strength.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that ultimately all of our strength comes from him. But as the name of the organization we took that my in-laws started almost 50 years ago, and they founded one of the first messianic organizations. So Jews who believe in Yeshua believe in Jesus. And it's been our vision for all this time is to make Israel strong in the Lord, and in particular through the gospel.
So that ministry has been going on a very, very long time, and it's a multifaceted ministry. I spent some time on your website. You guys are doing a lot in Israel right now. Just give us a 30,000-foot view of the ministry of Maoz Israel.
I mean, when you're dealing with organizations that have been around, kind of like the AFA, yeah, you know, for yeah. so long, it's a lot to say. But we really are, simply put, doing whatever we can to see Israel learn about Yeshua. The good news of Yeshua, and be strengthened. We do a lot of humanitarian outreach, a lot mm-hmm. of literature we publish. We started a publishing department to translate materials into Hebrew. We realized there were very little, and still, comparatively speaking to other countries, very little in Hebrew. So we're helping publish Bibles with our friends at the Israel Bible Society. So we do a lot to get materials and resources out to disciple and to equip the body in Israel. We believe that a strong body is the best witness mm-hmm. to the land of Israel. So a lot of what we do is to strengthen the body of believers in Israel and to be a shining light and that city on a hill to the entire nation of Israel, publishing materials, also recording music and a lot of outreach through media. And, and during this war, we had to pivot and do a lot of things differently. So our vision stayed the same, even though we're in a complete time of war and devastation. We said, what can we do to help? So half of our team had to be called up to immediately fight and serve in the military. All of our team were Israeli citizens in Israel. I'm an Israeli citizen, and I went and volunteered with the IDF as well. Mm-hmm. And so we did everything we could to help, especially the soldiers in the very beginning, because over 360,000 were called up immediately. So that created a real strain on the system. So I went and told different army bases, look, our organization wants to serve, and we want to partner with you.
Okay, good.
And so that's what we did. There were, I mean, basic things like water and food and shoes and bulletproof jackets and mm-hmm. whatever we could get a hold of. And we were able to really, because of the prayers and the financial backing, because of Christians around the world responded to the needs. We saw things that we've never been able to see. We even helped start a school. Wow. And we started seeing there's so many needs of the evacuees. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis had to evacuate into safer areas. So they've been living in hotels and mm-hmm. and just makeshift places. And so during that time, we said, what can we do to help these evacuees? And one of the mayors of a city said, well, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, can you help us build a school? We have so many kids that survive October 7th here in this particular city. And we just said, look, let's step out in faith and do it. And partners helped, stepped up, and we finished that school. I think it took less than 2 months to finish. And so these are just – and we've never done things on that kind of level. So during the most difficult seasons, we've seen kind of the biggest shining light in the dark places.
Mm. Kobe, when you think of the history of Israel and those particular dates and years that are so significant, May of 1948, the establishment of the State of Israel, you have the Six-Day War, you have so many events, but October the 7th, 2023 – is such an incredible monumental date in the history, not only of Israel, I think in the history of the world. Can you give us a sense of what is going on in the hearts and minds of the Israelis?
Well, we'll back up to October 7th, 2023. This was a date, as you said, that will remain in infamy.
Yeah.
This was our September 11th. You know, if you take the comparative size of Israel to the U.S., it's as if 50,000 or more people died in the Twin Towers and died in the Pentagon and the different attacks of September 11th. So that's huge. It's 7.2 million Jewish people, total population 10 million in Israel. A very small country in comparison to others like the U.S. So everyone in the country has been impacted, from the guy who sells bread down the street. We go to try there, go there to get bread. And his grandfather's back from retirement working. He told me all the kids are at war. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, okay. So my principal of my daughter's school had to go fight. Nobody to lead the school right now. And so forth and so on. So it's affected us in a very deep way, very personal way. My own daughter serving, and I have three daughters. My second daughter being recruited and going in her future to serve as well. And so it's impacted the entire country. And I think people are becoming, now that we fast forward to over 9 months later in the war, there's a fatigue. It's a difficult.
Yeah.
They're trying to switch up and bring in fresh troops and give people time off. But it's very difficult back home. You know, you have the war front and then you have the home front. And the home front is also suffering, and people, I think, are willing to stand together. But it's definitely been extremely, extremely difficult.
How have you seen the hearts of the average Israeli affected spiritually as a result of this? Because we know the Word of God says that not only will there be a regathering from the four corners of the earth into the land, but God will also provoke them to jealousy. So what's going on spiritually right now in the hearts of the people?
I can only talk about those things which I've been seeing. And as we really began to just help in very practical ways, people began to ask us very simply, who are you? And what they meant was, I've heard of Messianic Jews. Some of them had never heard of us. What do you guys believe? And actually, some of the statements that we heard the most frequently are, aren't you guys a cult? You know, if we were, we wouldn't know it. You know, what do you mean? You know, and then my wife, who's a very, we'll just say, a very strong woman.
Okay.
She told one of the leaders that asked her that. She said, well, maybe you're in the cult, you know.
Yeah.
And he began to laugh. He said, okay, I get your point. Like, she said, look, we've come to serve, come to help you build the school, for example. That she spearheaded that whole project. And the mayor told her, he said, I give you a promise and a commitment. I will never call you a cult again. And what that means is there's a narrative that's changing. Israeli Messianic Jews have been considered kind of persona non grata. There's been some persecution. We're considered, I tell people that in the U.S. they might relate to this, you know, we weren't allowed to play in other reindeer games, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like, you know, we've got projects going on here. You guys are odd. You're traitors to your own people. So what we've been considered. Because of their lack of understanding and misunderstanding of, you know, Jewish history with the Christians and the Christian anti-Semitism of centuries. But we tell them, no, things are changing, and we're Jewish, we're Israeli, we're citizens just like you. And they're realizing, as a lot of our soldiers are serving, a lot of Messianic Jews are in the military and actually have given their lives as an ultimate sacrifice to protect the country. So their eyes are being opened to us, which I am realizing that's eventually opening their eyes to him.
That's so exciting. Tell us how we can pray and how we can help with the work that is going on in the nation.
Well, as we were sharing in our devotion time with the team today, right, we were talking about a renewing of strength. Israel's not really built for long-term war. If you look historically, in the Six-Day War, about the extent of, you know, we talk about months and months and months of a prolonged multi-front war. It gets intense and it gets very tough for all involved. So really pray for the entire nation to stay in unity, and that's beyond politics. It's something that the Lord can really only do. But we would be in unity, even though we are different, have different thoughts and opinions of politics and governmental views and things, but just a real unity from the Lord, and for the believers in the land to have continued opportunities to just sow into this harvest field, to be a light in the darkness, and that our families would be strong, because if the enemy can come and divide, sadly, that's what happens often during pressure. Things can either bond together, like a diamond can be created, or things break when they're under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So during these seasons, I'm believing that our faith will emerge as having been tested by fire, and that the Lord will cause a lot of his body, because we have a growing body of believers in Israel, probably thousands and thousands of believers. Some say maybe 10, 20,000.
That's a huge change from years ago.
Oh, it's amazing. Even the years I've been in Israel most of my life now, and things have been growing. Sometimes it's a real slow growth.
Yeah.
But that's what we want to believe for. In the midst, if we're going to suffer, we're going to go through such seasons, it's like, let it count for something. Mm. Let the Lord get something out of this. His sacrifice is worthy for, and that eyes would be open to their Messiah, and that we would see supernatural miracles and protection. My own daughter serving very close to the action. The listeners can please pray for her, for Kobe's daughter. The Lord knows who she is, if you say Kobe's daughter.
Yeah.
And she's very close to the action. That's all I can say about her position. But there's I think it's really good to connect also with believers in the land, because it's good to get information that you can trust. I know AFR is a very trusted source as well. And so we appreciate the prayers. And I just want to encourage people, because sometimes you pray, it's like, is anything happening?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an eyewitness. I can tell all those who are out there that are praying that things are happening when you pray for Israel. The Lord is listening and he acts.
People will want to follow the ministry. So where do they go to find out more about Kobe Ferguson and Maoz Israel?
I think it's easier for people to go to israelneedsme.com. It's a link that we set up to point people to the ministry. It's easy to remember. Yeah. Israelneedsme.com.
Israelneedsme.com. Kobe Ferguson, our guest today. Kobe, thank you for being here with us, for your work. And boy, our hearts just resonate with what you're doing. We love the nation of Israel. We know that God is zealous for his people there. And we pray that God will continue to take those seeds and that water that you're pouring and will produce much, much fruit.
Shalom, shalom. Thank you.
Today's program was a best of edition of The Stand Radio. Guest and resource information, as well as a podcast of today's program, is available at AFR.net. Be sure to get your free 6-month trial subscription to The Stand magazine, or sign up for our daily email at afa.net/The Stand. Now, next week, we'll start off the new year with a special Hannah's Heart edition of The Stand Radio, where we'll talk with Ann Cockrell and Kendra White about infertility. And we'll learn from Joseph Parker 5 ways that we can pray for young couples who are struggling with infertility. We hope you have a happy new year, and we'll join us next time here on The Stand Radio.